We're going to finish lesson two tonight. We're going to start on a section on friendship. But before we do, I just want to say that I know many of you are going to be going home and may not be here next week and during the summer. But I have so enjoyed teaching this class. I'll have to admit to you that in my 30-something years of preaching, this has been my very favorite class. I have appreciated your listening, your encouragement. I hope I've challenged you, and you certainly have challenged me. I've been very thankful, and again, I hope that this has been a mutually profitable time for us. And again, I thank you so much for your interest and good attendance. Tonight, I'm going to do like we did last week. We talked a little bit about the conscience, and now we're going to talk about friendship and worship. These are common subjects that we've talked that I'm sure you've studied a lot, but I'd like to have a little more discussion and talk about some of these truths. One of the things that has been on my mind, being my first year here, I'm a freshman. And you look back at the year, and one of the things that's on my mind, and this is the way I think, who did we lose? You know, who was here with us at the start? Who's not here now? Some people you may not have known that were with us, and then we're gone, and I've heard from some parents, and I've actually been making contact with some parents, been trying to, you know, understand what has happened, how a person, you know, comes to college, and then with such opportunities as we would have at a congregation like this, they would fall away. Well, I'll tell you tonight, as we talk about this has been kind of probably one of the biggest things. And this is going to be something, a challenge for us as you come back in the fall. When we come back in the fall and we've got a little experience here, we need to look for the new people and find a way to make contact and not let them slip outside our associates. Now, we can't make somebody our friend, and somebody may not want to be with you and they go another direction. But one of the things I've seen pretty consistently is you can almost see a person as they start slipping away. They don't do things with Christians. They set up in the balcony, you know, by themselves, you know, and they come and they're gone, and you know, and you can't even tackle them to get them, and so these are some things that I want you and I to recognize. Having a strong faith, your friendships, your associates, who you date, who you hang out with, is reflective of your spirituality and is a good indicator of your future. Let's look at some verses if we could. Proverbs 27:17. As iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Somebody explain that verse to me. As iron sharpeneth iron. What does that mean? Is this always true? Is this, if you've got a friend, then this is true automatically, right? No, not automatically. What does it mean? Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend.
You have good friends who will mutually benefit each other.
Yeah. You see, this is assuming a good friend, okay? A man who loves God, who has character, who knows right and wrong. And you know what? The people that have been my friends, if I'm going a wrong direction and I don't want to see it, they're going to pound on my head. Iron sharpeneth iron. And you know, we all get in that situation sometimes, don't we? You know, have you ever dated somebody that really wasn't right for you? Got infatuated? And your friends go, oh no. You know, you don't see that. And they kind of would like to help you. Sometimes they plant some subtle seeds. And sometimes you have to see things. You've got to crash and burn and see things yourself. But sometimes we get that way. We will close our eyes and lower our head. And that is when, if you have made good choices with friends, they will help you. I really do mean this. Bit of advice. Outside of marriage, and the one you choose to marry, the friends you choose will determine your eternity. I have seen that consistently. There was a man that I knew once, a good friend. He'd been a preacher, but he got involved with drugs. His wife divorced him, moved to Florida. He ended up going to prison. Not to prison, but he was in jail. He was in jail and he was released. But he tried to get his life straight. And I was telling him, I said, my friend, if you're going to make it, you're going to have to surround yourself with good people. And you know he did. And he's doing a remarkable work for the Lord today. Very encouraging. None of us, not a one of you here, are exempt from this. So again, I'm not saying that, you know, you may say, well, how do I make friends? I just, you know, my friends just happen to come. No, they don't. And we'll talk about that as we go along here. You know, it's interesting, again, in the book of Proverbs, wisdom, wise men know this. Proverbs 22:10-11, cast out the scoffer and contention will leave. Yes, strife and reproach will cease. He who loves purity of heart and has grace on his lips, the king will be his friend. Now let's kind of break this one down a little bit. Why would this kind of person that the king would want to be his friend? Now we're assuming here a few things. A wise king. Why does a wise king, let's say if you're going to run a business, you're going to have an engineering firm. By the way, you engineering majors, I was looking at some studies today. I don't know why I did it online, but it was the 10 top most difficult jobs to fill. In other words, for the future, you know, the jobs are going to be in demand. They say engineering jobs are really going to be in demand. That's good. But let's say you're running a company. Who do you hire? Who do you put in leadership positions? Come on, we got some future entrepreneurs here, business owners. Who do you put in? Somebody with best education?
People with experience.
What's that?
People with experience.
Or she feels qualified all around.
Yeah, well, tell me about all around. Let's develop that. One thing I want to look at is this character. You do a background check. Oh, let's say he has a tendency to steal things. You know? You have your inventory walk out the back door. You know, has a tendency not to work with people. Be a fool. You know, when you're dealing with business, these are very serious things. You know what a lot of businessmen will do today before they hire somebody? Look at their Facebook page and look at a few other things. I'm serious, dead serious, guys. You're leaving a digital track record on your Facebook and MySpace page and all those other things, and employers look at it. That is good employers. You see, a king, who does a king want to have around him? Look at the two kinds of people here. What's the first kind of person up there that's described as being cast out?
Scoffer.
Huh? Scoffer. What's a scoffer?
Kind of foolhardy. Placid. Just kind of careless.
Know-it-all, hot air. You know, laughs at things, no principle, nobody can tell me anything. And so he's good for what? He's good for being cast out. So again, look, in your life, I'm going to say it again, the ones you choose to be around you can build you up or tear you down. I've looked back in my life, and I have been so thankful for the few that I've had surrounding me, and I've seen their lives and where they've gone. And I'll say, there comes times when we need help in our decisions and our direction. And let's just say this. You choose kind of friends of character. Will you be tempted to tell dirty jokes with your friend? That's one of character. You wouldn't want to do that. Would you be tempted to go out here and get drunk with the rest of the people, with your friend? No, they won't let you do that. They don't want to go there and do that. It's very interesting as you look at the choices of what happens. Great example of Jonathan and David. And again, I'm going to kind of go fast tonight over this. We're going to do more talking. But do you know how Jonathan and David became friends? Does anyone know how they became friends? When they first met? This is fascinating. Let's talk about them a little bit. Let's see. Jonathan, let's talk about a little bit about their character. Let's see, faith will always, you know, by the way, if somebody really has conviction in God, you know you're going to know it. That person doesn't have to say a word. If you're around them, Bible says faith speaks. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works and I'll show you my faith by my works. Let's talk about Jonathan. Do you know what Jonathan did before he met David? How would you characterize Jonathan? He was a man of great faith. Now think about this. Now look at this. You think about this. The Philistines were, could I say in Star Trek lingo, they were the Klingons, you know, of the Old Testament. You know, they were the warriors. They were ready to fight. I mean, you don't mess with them. And so here Jonathan goes out, and notice this. He says, now it happened one day, Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man who bore his armor, come, let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side. But he did not tell his father. Now, Jonathan, just a moment, son. You're going out with a young man that's your armor bearer. And you're going to see a Philistine? No, you're going to a Philistine garrison. Now, that's a real good way to die. But now notice, this wasn't just a casual walking out. This was a man of faith. And what he does is basically he appeals to the Lord. And he asks for the Lord to give him an indication of what he should do. And in verse 10 it says, but if they say thus, come up to us, then we will go up, for the Lord has delivered them into our hand. And this will be a sign to us. Now, he had the ability to speak with the Lord and have this kind of communication. And so him and his armor bearer take on a garrison. Who wins? Jonathan and God together. Who wins? You know, hey, you've got God on your side, you won. And so there was a great slaughter that was led because of Jonathan. So Jonathan was a man kind of like David, wasn't he? Remember, now how Jonathan met David was, and let me just move along here. Jonathan met David at the occasion of Goliath. Now, remember, in the case of Goliath, everyone was afraid of Goliath. Now, I want to tell you something. You go against Goliath, that would be kind of like going against the Philistine garrison. Yeah, about the same thing. And now here David just kind of can't believe it. We got anybody around here believes in God? 1 Samuel 17:32. Then David said to Saul, let no one man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or bear came and took the lamb out of the flock, I went after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it rose against me, I caught it by its beard. I struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. Now you know the rest of the story, don't you? He met Goliath and said, you've defied God. God is going to deliver you into my hands. Now, that took faith. Now, who would David want to be friends with? Who would Jonathan want to be friends with? They had not met up to this point. Goliath is slain. Again, I'm going to move along here. Goliath is slain. And make sure I've got this on the chart. I hope I've got it. Yeah. Goliath is slain. Now, notice what happens. Here's where they first meet. Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. So here's David. I guess you can say he's getting ahead in life. You know, he's got the Philistine's head, okay? All right, little bad joke there. Okay. All right. And it says, then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. Now notice verse 1 of chapter 18. Now when he had finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Why do they become friends? Their faith. Now, you see, if you really want to build, you have good friends, let faith be the basis of your friends. And I realize sometimes you say, well, I'm not there yet. My faith is not as strong as it ought to be. Build your faith. As you build your faith and it means something to you, it will change your relationships. And I'm telling you, if you don't do that, you won't make it. If you analyze again, I go back in this last year and I try to get to know people, even though they may not have known me, when particularly I see somebody struggling, I try to find out what I can. And many times you'll see that people make associates, and sometimes, you know, get this one, you can make associates of people that may attend this congregation and be making the wrong choices in associates. Because that's one thing I've always known when it comes to college groups, you've got different elements, you know. And you got the one element, they're going to go out here and they're going to do things that everybody on campus does and they won't do things with Christians. And you've got another element that's trying to pray and study together and do things, and you got maybe one in the middle that's just kind of... But I'm telling you, you go back and look, if you have had failure, if things have not gone well for you, you need to look at your faith, but also look at your associates. One of the big challenges this next year, I hope we can do a better job of trying to reach out to others. Others may not want to be with us. Talked with one mother recently, and they said, well, he was complaining a little bit about how the people here in this congregation, they're not very socially friendly. And the mother had an insight. Well, I tell you what, I really think it's happening. He wanted to live a certain way and do a certain thing, and he knew Christians wouldn't do it with him. Okay, yeah, in that case, we're unfriendly. But I'm telling you, as you look at this, you know, like I say, we can't make somebody come around, but we need to think about our own lives. Who do we associate with? Makes a big difference. Comments on this? Comments? Anything? I do want you to be thinking about this summer, what can we do better to make sure we don't have somebody that comes to us new that drifts away. Because see, sometimes I'll find somebody drifting and I can get on it and try to make contact and association. You know, I've seen people turn around because somebody cared enough to reach out to them. And that's something, again, I'd like us to do better, you know, next time, next quarter. Okay, I want to go to the next section. Oh, by the way, I like a quote here by Oswald Chambers. A friend is one who makes me do my best. Okay, time we got left, I'll talk about worship a little bit. And so let me just slide through this, and we'll talk about worship. Okay. Worship. Let me throw one at you here. This is not an easy question. As a matter of fact, I can make you kind of struggle with this question. Y'all ready? Final exam. Here it is. Answer this question. What is worship?
To kiss toward.
What's that?
To kiss toward.
Okay. That's right. To kiss the hand upward. That is very correct, technically, in the Greek. That is correct. Proskuneo. If you want to know the Greek word. Okay. Okay, yes.
Would it just be praising God?
That would be worship. So the only way we worship is praising God then. Is that what you're saying? Or are you just giving a subset of worship?
Just a subset, I guess.
Okay. Let's look at... we'll have a little fun with this. Or at least challenge. Hopefully not just fun. Let's go to Romans 12. 1 and 2. Now, I'm wanting to make you think here. There are different words in Scripture that is translated worship. Romans 12:1, it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Does anybody have the New International Version? How about reading verse 1 for me?
Therefore, I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercy, to offer
Now, very interesting translation. This is your spiritual act of worship. This is not a critical point here, but in the Greek, there's a couple of different words that sometimes translated worship. There's proskuneo, which you find in John 4:23 and 24, where the true worshipers, those who worship God, must worship in spirit and truth. Here in Romans 12:1, it's the Greek word latreo, which literally means service. There's some people that will say this to you: everything you do is worship. If you're changing a baby's diaper, that's worship. If you're mowing the lawn for somebody, that's worship. Now, I've heard many people preach this. I've had elders once where I was at that believed it. Here's the problem with that. We're not defining words. Okay? If you mean, you know, the idea of service is service that is something done with God in mind, and they want to call that worship. Okay, well, this is really what this is saying, is that we've got God in our minds as we do something. We should always have the presence of the Lord in our mind. Now, I don't call that worship. Some translators will translate that worship. Now, let me tell you what I call worship. I call worship the time where we, in a special way, place ourselves before God. Like in prayer. Where it's not just walking down the road and, you know, knowing there's a God. It's a time where I'm literally coming before God to kiss the hand upward, where I am in my mind before Him. My focus is on Him. People can debate the definitions here, okay? If people want to debate the definitions, you could go to the Greek and you can get real confused. I'm just asking people the question, look, folks. There's a big difference between me mowing the lawn for somebody as an act of goodness and me coming before my God in the Lord's Supper or in prayer or in singing. And so if you want to call it something else, that's fine. Get your definition straight. But when I speak about worship, I'm talking about the time where you place yourself before God in a special sense. Does that make sense? There are people that are coming up with a whole system of teaching. You know what one of the ways people are justifying instrumental music now in worship? It's real easy. You define worship incorrectly. Everything we do is worship. How many of you have been part of a solo and ensemble group in band? Or had your own band out here? Well, if everything you do in worship, when you're doing that, you're worshiping God. You see, they play games with terminology. Worship is not just any time, anything. It is a time when we come before God in a special consciousness. That's what John 4:23 and 24 talks about. Let's read this verse together. It says, "But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such to worship Him. God is spirit, and those who worship Him must worship in spirit and in truth." Now, there's some very rare phrases in the Bible. You don't see much. Verse 23 is one of them. There's something said in verse 23 about God that ought to make our mouth drop just a little bit. When you consider who God is. What does it say about God in verse 23?
Seeking.
What's that?
God is seeking.
Whoa. God is seeking? He's seeking a few good worshipers. You know, you can almost see the recruiting, you know, poster of the Marines, you know, looking for a few good men. God's looking for a few good worshipers. But really, do you see many statements in the Scriptures about God seeking? Now, with that in mind, is worship easy? We're going to go into some discussion because we don't have a lot of time. Is worship easy?
I think sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Yes, that's good. Great answer. When is it easy?
When you're happy.
Okay. And happiness based on?
Everything's going well.
Like, well, when you've got the right mindset, like when you understand that, oh, I have these blessings. blessings, and they're from God, then it's easy to praise Him because He's given you what you want.
There. Now, you see, you can things be going well, and you can get further away from God than ever. Your right mindset, when you see the blessing connected with God and your heart overflows, that's another way of describing worship. You're placing yourself before God and your heart is overflowing. It's not easy to be consistent with that. And so, worship is work. But if you'll learn how to do this, it will bless you greatly. I hope that we've had such good attendance, and I think we have. Because you're wanting to come here and get something and learn something. I hope that's the reason. That's one of the things as we deal with our assemblies, we deal with our classes, we should come here wanting to learn. But it's not always easy, is it? Like you may have finals and be sleep deprived for the last 2 weeks and here you are, you know, try to worship like that. I understand it's not always easy. But if you will learn, and I'm going to tell you something, you can worship God when the preacher is boring. Or he preaches too long. Or you've got a subject you've heard many times before. This is where, if you can learn some things, and I don't have time to talk about them all tonight, but where you can gear yourself up and you say, I am going to engage my mind. You know, brethren, I will not be offended if I'm preaching a lesson and you're having a hard time following me. If you took some of the scriptures in my outline and just kind of blocked me out, started looking at those, I wouldn't be offended at that. You know, you got to find ways as you're in the assembly to learn to worship, but it's not just the assembly as well, is it? The assembly should be a small portion of our worship. Why is our society ill-equipped? What forces in society makes worship difficult for us? There are certain cultural things about where we live that makes the idea of worship foreign.
Worship is the idea of giving glory to somebody else, and our society is completely self-centered.
That's correct. It's self-centered. What else about worship? That's real good. What do, let's say, middle schoolers like to do, particularly boys? I don't know not much of girls, but What do middle school boys, elementary school boys like to do with their spare time?
Set fire.
What's that?
Set fire.
Okay. Stephen did that once, and he did set our whole yard on fire one time, and then he didn't do that again. He only did it once. He'd tell you about that story sometime. It's pretty funny. But while I was putting the fire out, I had him call 911. He was not happy with that. But anyway, how about video games? You know, that's a real big thing. Why do video games? What makes them interesting? It's because you have to meditate and plot your next move several minutes. It's what's the key with video games?
Just set things on fire.
Yeah. Say that again. Yeah, you set things on fire a different way. You release the, like say, but you know, it keeps you moving, you keep active, and so we're not very meditative. Meditation, mental discipline, being alone and placing yourself alone before God, those are hard things. The culture doesn't help us, but here's where we've got to learn. Again, at the end of the short amount of time we've got tonight, I can only say there's some directions and more teaching we can have along these lines. I like what A.W. Tozer said. He says, we're called to an everlasting preoccupation with God. And I'll make this class real simple. And I really, really, really mean this. If I could give you the assignment for the summer, when things are going well, when you're rejoicing, remember that gift came from God. And really spend time thanking Him. Matter of fact, when things aren't going well, think about the good things God has done for you. And be thankful to Him. I know this sounds so simple, you're saying, okay, let's get to something more substantial. This is substantial. Always be thankful. Learn every day to be thankful and to let that thankfulness be focused upon God. One of the things I like to do when I'm outside and I see the beauty of creation, you know, a lot of times we're running around doing this, running that, and all of a sudden, wow, look. Look at the sky, look at the stars, look at the moon. And at that point, just stop your day and say, Lord, thank you for caring about me. Thank you for your creation. Thank you for leading me to where I am today. Let that be a common thought in your heart. Focus upon God. Learn to do that. And I'll guarantee you, if you will become more thankful, your worship will become more substantial. You grow in worship just like a sport. In running, you know, I've had some injuries. I've had to take 2 weeks off and now I'm coming back. But I have to come back. I do a little bit each day and grow. The idea of meditating on God and worshiping God, our prayer to God, it's one of those things that it really takes time. It's a mindset that we have to develop. One writer said, and I think it's true, you see weakness and carnality in a congregation, you'll find people that aren't worshiping. It can pretty well be said, with somebody's fallen away, you could see it coming along ahead of before that when they don't know how to worship. Now, I'll have to tell you, brethren, I got a pretty good eye when it comes to the pulpit and other things. And I don't want to scare you. But I can see boredom. Of course, now, when I see boredom, I look at myself first. Okay, guys, you know, let's see what we do a better job of that lesson. But there are times, man, I can throw everything at somebody. And it's like, you know, again, Star Trek, the shields are up. It just bounces off. And I see people that are here, but they don't want to be here. And so you're going to go one direction or another. You're going to be either improving in your worship and growing closer to God, or you're going to go further away. If you're really struggling in worship, I'm not telling you that I can say here, okay, you just got to worship. Well, if you see a problem, fight for that. Fight to turn that around. And so, again, I think we all have these times and struggles. Could coming to the services make us weaker? Is it possible to come to a service and be weaker for it? Yes. 1 Corinthians 11:17. Now in giving these instructions, I do not praise you, since you come together not for the better, but for the worse. Now in this case, they were bringing a common meal into the assembly, and people came in drunk, and people were left hungry, and it was a mess. But there was a chaotic worship, and you come together in a way not to edify. And then you had carnality and fusses there. You know, you could come together for the worse. You know, you could come together and not like each other. And people not talk to each other. Have you ever been in a service like that where people were angry and there you just felt like you just felt the tension when you walked into the building? What happens if we don't worship? Let's take the Lord's Supper. And I'll tell you, brethren, there are times my mind drifts. But let's say we view worship like taking medicine. I'll hold my nose and grit my teeth and I will do it because I'm a good, faithful member of the church. But as soon as I can get out of here, I'm gone. And if I can just take the minimum, let me have Sunday morning only. Don't worry about the rest of this. I'm a faithful Christian. If we don't learn to worship, notice what happens. Here's somebody not partaking the Lord's Supper with the right kind of heart. Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner. It's not talking about having sinned that week, and because you sinned that week, you can't take the Lord's Supper. This is not what it's talking about. You should always come before the Lord forgiven. But here's the way you partake of it. In an unworthy manner, will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For he who eats and drinks in an unworthy manner, notice this, eats and drinks judgment to himself, not discerning the Lord's body. For this reason, many are weak and sick among you, and many sleep. You know what the idea of somebody sleeping is? It's not that they close their eyes at the services, okay? What's the idea of many sleeping? Well, you know what another name for sleeping is in the New Testament when you say somebody is asleep?
Dozing off.
They are dead. They're gone. Worship, you fail to worship. You're on the path to falling away. Now, as I say that, am I just talking about the assembly? Well, of course, we are about the Lord's Supper. But how you learn to worship is you need to commonly go before God in a special way. You need to pray to God and nobody else sees you. You need to have friends that want to go to God and do things and pray to Him and have occasions to study. This is, we're talking about learning to place God in your consciousness every day you live. We've got just a few minutes. I think we got the first bell ring. Any other suggestions you guys have? I know we're kind of really running through this subject. Would you do me a favor? If you are struggling, or if there's some things we can do better, let's talk about it. Because I know on my end, I'm really constantly looking, how can I best edify? How can I best help those? I'm a servant as a teacher. I'm very thankful to be a teacher. But we've got to constantly be on top of that, because the one thing you don't want to have happen is it looks like we're going through a routine. A mindless repetition. And so again, I can't change other people, but I can make sure that I don't go down that path. Okay, I'm going to read a quote from Bill Hall, and then it will be your lesson. The lesson will be yours, if I can get there here. Here we are. Oh, by the way, here, I think it's interesting how some people don't worship, they stay busy. But here's the quote from Bill Hall. It is the responsibility of gospel preachers to make people miserable who continue to sin. If unrepentant sinners sit comfortably through worship periods week after week, something is wrong. Peter brought the people at Pentecost to see their sin. The people were miserable. And as a result, asking men and brethren, what shall we do? Peter showed them the way out of their misery in the words, repent and be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ. 3,000 obeyed and replaced their misery with the joy of the Lord. Misery followed by salvation in Christ. Do you know you're going to make some choices where you attend when you leave Auburn? Has the second bell rung yet? You need to go to a place where you'll get the right kind of preaching and teaching. And that's going to be increasingly more difficult in our country. I believe we're in an apostasy. You need to go to a place where somebody's going to challenge you, where the pulpit will challenge you, classes will challenge you. You got to, you know, there's a big difference. You go to some place where you don't have that. Anyway, I pray for those that won't be back or going home after this week that you'll have a good summer. You know, I appreciate the occasions we've had together in our study tonight. Thank you for your participation. By the way, I've got lesson threes up here. If you want one for next week, an advanced copy for next week, you're going to be here next week. I've got threes if you're interested in those.
Your brother was razzing on you. I saw him at Walmart the other night. He's like, have you seen him out there? I was like, no.
Yeah.
He just rolled his eyes. You know Brendan.
He went,
oh. Yeah.
He did his usual...
Napoleon Dynamite. It's not any funny colors, though, so, I mean...
No, it will never...
No green?
No.
Blue?
The only time I might have colors in is during football season.
Oh, yeah.
The only time.